Hi, I'm Tony Smith, head coach of the Warrington Wolves. This is the Rugby League World Cup final hooter on loverugbyleague.com and Radio General.
Hello there, welcome to another Rugby League World Cup final hooter on Radio General, Hospital Radio for Warrington, and the loverugbyleague.com website. My name's Adrian Jackson, and as always, I'm joined by David Parkinson. 3 years in the making, and the World Cup is up and running, and we've had a cracking opening week of action, haven't we?
Oh, I'll tell you what, I am just so enthused for this game of Rugby League, this game of ours at the moment. I think that all the games have been of tremendous standard. I've really enjoyed the action. We've seen some tremendous hackers as well, and even the all-in prayer of the Fijians, which was just something very emotional as well, and that was a really emotional game over there at Spotland. So yeah, it's been fantastic so far. We've seen massive crowds, we've seen a huge surge in interest in the game, and the action's been pretty good as well, and all the players generally have been behaving themselves.
Well, you say all the players, everyone but two.
Yes, Sam Burgess, he's already been suspended for one game for lamping an Australian, although I think we should be rewarding him rather than actually suspending him. And then there was Paul Ayton, the hooker for Papua New Guinea. He was banned for one game, but he's appealed against it and got off. Brett White, also of the Ireland side, he's been cautioned for his tackling technique, and judging from some of the hits that were going in from some of those Fijians, I'm surprised they didn't receive a raft of letters as well.
Say about all the big hits I've seen in the opening games from those Fijians and the Samoans and the New Zealanders and the Australians and everybody else that's been involved in the Rugby League World Cup in this week one of the tournament. I don't know about the players, but my ribs are killing me.
Oh, yeah, I'll tell you what, some of them have been measuring on Richter scales up and down the world, haven't they? It's just been when worlds collide, we've got a clash for the World Cup, and it's living up to billing. And I'm really pleased because, far too often we're quick to decry our game, aren't we? And we're quick to sort of criticise and perhaps look for the negatives. We're quite negative people, we're always rugby league people, aren't we? But you've got to admit, the last few days have been totally brilliant. And
you mentioned about the hackers. I think Samoa's just about shades it for me, but I was thinking about our boys, England and Wales and Scotland and Ireland and France, having to stand there and watch that. Wouldn't it be ace if say England could do some Morris dancing?
Oh, well, that would be interesting, yeah.
Or Scotland could do Highland dancing around the swords or whatever, do a nice little Highland dance move.
They could have a Highland fling.
Ireland could do river dancing.
Yeah.
Wales, what could they do? Welsh dancing, do you do traditional Welsh dancing?
I'm sure there must be some sort of traditional Welsh dancing. Maybe they could do the moonwalk, I don't know.
I think the French could do that imitation stuff, you know what they do on the TV in France with the berets.
They could do the can-can, couldn't they, as well? You know, and a high-kicking step. Yeah,
If England did Morris dancing, that'd strike the fear of death into the New Zealanders.
I think they'd probably fall down laughing as well, to be honest. But not that I'm decrying anybody out there who does Morris dancing, of course. Fine, good old traditions, innit?
Right, let's talk seriously about the Rugby League. Coming up in our Rugby League World Cup Coaches Corner, we're going to have Jes Dinaris from Wales, Matt Parish from Samoa, and Stephen Kearney, who talks about New Zealand's win against the Samoans in Warrington on Sunday. We'll also hear from Jared Wahat.
You've been practising that as well.
I have, haven't I?
Jared Warrior Hargreaves.
Jared Warrior Hargreaves is what I meant to say. Get my teeth in, and we'll hear from the legend Petro Sivinachiva.
Sivinachiva.
Now, can we edit that bit out when we go to the podcast?
Yeah, we'll get that edited. Yeah, don't worry. Yeah. And, for everybody around Warrington Hospital, don't worry about it. He is practising. I can assure you that he's well-versed and he's well-practised.
So plenty to talk about between now and the end of this show. But let's give you the results from round one of the World Cup, shall we? In Group A, all started off in Cardiff, and it was England and Australia who got the game up and running. Australia winning that one 28-20. On Monday, we saw Fiji take on Ireland in Rochdale, and Fiji won that one 32 points to 14. In Group B, we've seen Papua New Guinea take on France in Hull. That was at the Hawkinson Rovers ground, by the way. It was Papua New Guinea 8, France 9. And on the Sunday night at the Halliwell Jones Stadium, New Zealand won that one 42-24 against Samoa. In Group C, it was Tonga versus Scotland to enter the World Cup action in Workington. That was on Tuesday. It was Tonga 24, Scotland 26. And one result we can't tell you about because that's happening as we record this podcast. It happens in Bristol. USA versus the Cook Islands. That's a game that intrigues me.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen, as I mentioned, really, really physical crowds and how everybody's sort of really bought into this World Cup. That's a bit of an outsider's one, not just because we don't know how America's going to play. We don't even know how the Cook Islands are going to play, even though they have had a warm-up game under the belt against New Zealand last weekend. But it's also being played in Bristol, isn't it? Which is, as we know, nowhere near Rugby League heartland. So I'm all for pushing the boundaries of the game. I hope that it's a good crowd that is watching that this evening.
Right then, let's go back to the start of the World Cup. It was in Group A, it was in Cardiff, a double header to kick it all off with. And the first one was the big guns who were up and running, Australia versus England. England were in dreamland at the start of that game when they were 10-0 up, but Australia came back and got the victory they were looking for.
Yeah, it was a fantastic start really for England. They scored the first try after 8 minutes, a flowing movement out down the left-hand side and Ryan Hall going over. Then George Burgess thought that he dived in about 8.5 minutes later, but that got ruled out by the video referee. But England weren't to be perturbed or put off. Leroy Cudjoe claiming a clever crossfield kick. It was like a reverse Derek Fox-esque type kick, if you remember the old halfback who used to play over at Featherstone and Bradford, angled across the field from Kevin Sinfield. That was converted for a 10 points to the lead. And as you mentioned, at that particular point in the game, Adrian, England were flying, but you can never take your eyes off Australia and you can never take your eyes off the ball, can you? And when Greg Inglis sort of got over the head of Sam Tompkins contesting a high kick to the corner, he got the ball inside. Jonathan Thurston got their first points for the Australians, scoring and then converting as well. Greg Bird pulled a further try back and they edged in front 2.5 minutes out from the break before England thought that they fashioned something right at the end of the first half. Tompkins thought he was away down the middle, but sadly it was a forward pass, and from the resulting scrum a really adventurous bit of play saw Billy Slater get through a bit of cockeyed defence, I think I call it, I describe it, and he raced away from 50 metres to touchdown, and that ultimately gave Australia an 8 point advantage at the half that they didn't really deserve. But second half they were really strong, particularly in the opening 15 minutes Australia, and they got themselves away from England a little bit, didn't they, with a Brett Morris try just 4 minutes into the second half.
Sadly, it weren't to be for England, Australia up and running. Steve McManara was saying after the end of that game, it was a game of what might have been.
I think he's right with that. I think it was a case of mischances. If England had really put the Aussies to bed at that period of time where they dominated for 20 minutes, it was a real slow start from the Australians, and it's something that we've not really been accustomed to seeing from them, certainly over the last 10-15 years. But it just shows that they're not supermen, and if you can get amongst them quickly, then you can certainly put them under a bit of pressure, and they found themselves under plenty of pressure. But they've got world-class players right across the field, and they managed to drag Australia out of the mire. Darius Boyd got their last try 9 minutes from the end, and although there was a bit of a response from England, with George Burgess going over and forcing his way through the middle, and then just Charnley picking up the pieces, sadly it's proved a little bit too much for England to overcome. They'd allowed Australia to get far too far in front, hadn't they?
They had, and it turned out to be a miserable day for the home nations, as Italy proved that victory against England in the final World Cup warm-up wasn't a fluke, as they got a big win against Wales.
Yeah, I was impressed really with Italy. I like the way that they play the game. They play keep it very, very simple, don't they? They have a big pack, good kicking game, and then the link-up plays that they have between a lot of the Sydney Roosters players, actually. I'm thinking your likes of your Anthony Minicello's and the centre Aidan Guerra. That's one partnership in particular that is really bearing fruit. Aidan Guerra going over for two tries during the game, and he looks a real handful and a real class player for the Italians. I do think that they certainly come into it. Again, I was impressed with Ben Valcone last week with his kicking game. He actually started this game at six and dominated it once more with plenty of long kicks, with Dean Parata kind of sniping away from dummy half. Joel Reithmuller, who had such a good influence against England last week, also coming up with a great effort. But the man who's really impressing me in this pack for Italy at the moment is Paul Vaughan from the Canberra Raiders. I think he's done a tremendous job. There was one particular run he put in, and I'm sure he went about 40 metres on it, and but for a little bit more support they could have been even further in front. It was spirited for Wales, and I do think they've got quite a lot to build on, in all honesty. Particularly Reece Evans at fullback, the Warrington kid, really did step up to the mark. I was a little bit bit wary of seeing how he would go, to be honest, because I've only ever seen him play wing and centre for Warrington. So for him to then end up at fullback and playing a starring role, and Elliot Keir did a good knock as well from his wing position, but ultimately they were a bit outgunned, weren't they, the Welsh?
Turned out to be a good day in terms of numbers watching that one. Just over 45,000 for the doubleheader and the opening of the Rugby League World Cup, and I think everyone will be happy with that.
Yeah, it's a record. It certainly beats the 2000 World Cup, which started off over at Twickenham. I don't know whether
I can say that.
Well, we're mentioning Cardiff, aren't we? So right, to be honest, let's just give it a quiet mention. I won't say it again, though. And I think that 45,000 is a really respectable crowd, to be honest. I mean, they took it away from the heartlands, didn't they? Again, it was one of those where they did play a game over there in Cardiff during the last World Cup. They only got 8,500 there for it, so to get sort of 4 or 5 times more than that, now that's got to be a winning situation, hasn't it?
Weather was shocking in the UK over the weekend, so thankfully in Cardiff the roof was closed. That meant it was great conditions to watch good flowing rugby league, and it meant you kept nice and warm and dry in the stands as well. So that's what happened on Saturday. On the Sunday, there was no roof at Hull Kingston Rovers, and it was a gale force wind and rain of plenty for Papua New Guinea and France to contend with, hence the close tight scoreline. And Papua New Guinea could have won this one but for the fact that they missed a last minute penalty right underneath the sticks as well.
Yeah, unfortunately for David Mead, he's not a recognised goal kicker, and to be honest, I think that Adrian Lamb, the coach of Papua New Guinea, was also saying after this game he doesn't have a recognised goal kicker in the Papua New Guinea ranks, so I think it's almost a case of the best will have to do, and it's unfortunate that in such a tight game, in such a titanic titanic struggle, that it came down to that. And but what an interesting clash as well. Again, a couple of big packs on show. The French are renowned for their physicality, and eventually just nudged their way out in front. Thomas Bosque opened the scoring in that one after 6 minutes. Then Neely MacDonald, he replied for the Papua New Guineans after 17 minutes. David Mead missed the conversion attempt there. It was just 4-6 at half time. That was in favour of the French. Josiah Abuvua went over after 3 minutes of the second half to put the Papuans back in front. And then we saw Thomas Boss penalty on the hour and that all-important field goal in the end from William Bartow. But as you mentioned, David Mead could have settled it all and given Papua New Guinea what would have been a very good win, because it's been a while since they beat one of the top nations, hasn't it?
Certainly has, and we heard in the last show from Adrian Lamb how they felt they were under pressure from the nation within Papua New Guinea. By losing to France, that's just cranked it up a little notch, hasn't it?
I think you're right, but ultimately in the pool that they're in, Group B, there is 3 teams that will qualify from it. So, you know, when all said and done, it's... I won't say a poor result, but it's a disappointing result for Papua New Guinea, but it's not something that they are going to sulk about. They've got to get themselves up for a clash coming up against New Zealand, haven't they? So, you know, these are things that they're going to have to do. They're going to have to put it behind them and see where they go in this World Cup campaign now. But you're right, they have got the weight of a nation behind them. But in some ways, does that not also inspire you as well?
I'm sure it will do. It inspired New Zealand and Samoa into a big match, didn't it, as they went head-to-head at Warrington. They sold out Warrington ground as well on the Sunday night. And despite the rain, it was an entertaining game of rugby league, wasn't it?
Fantastic. I mean, I think I commented when we started off, I've certainly spoke to you off air about it, that my favourite ever game was also in a World Cup back in 95, when it was New Zealand taking on Tonga, I'm afraid, over at the Wilderspool ground. And this one just about eclipsed it. It was awesome. There's so much good play, so much physicality about it. I love the two hackers and the way that both sides faced off against each other. And to be honest, it was just really, really good. Fantastic work from everybody involved. And great to see a sold-out stadium over at Warrington. So, I just thought that there was some tremendous work in there particularly from the Samoans, as they managed to come back from a hefty deficit, in all honesty. The New Zealanders, though, they did get away to a fine opening, ended up being something like 22 points to 4 ahead at half time. Couple of tries in there for the captain, Mannering, which I did remember jesting about at one point.
But I was humming the Dad's Army theme all night after that.
He's a fine player, though, isn't he? You can see why he's got 30 caps for his country. He really did lead them from the front, and especially early in the second half when they went sort of 36 points up, it was looking like it was going to be a real one-sided clash. But Samoa, they did hit back and show plenty of skill to get within touching distance, didn't they?
Well, on the Monday night, the rain continued to fall in Manchester. Fiji and Ireland matched up at Rochdale, and again another healthy crowd entertained to a decent game of rugby league. And unfortunately, Ireland just couldn't match the power of the Fijian team as they lost out 32 points to 14, and there were some tremendous tackles going in by the Fijian team. And at one stage, they got a bit too enthusiastic, and they were giving away plenty of penalties, weren't they? But they were able to deal with what Ireland threw at them and come away with a comprehensive victory.
Yeah, I think at one point, though, they were on the end of a 15-5 penalty count, weren't they, the Fijians? Again, I commented about perhaps the physicality of the Samoans. Fiji took it to a whole new level. They had a centre out there, didn't they? Wacker, or Wanger, I think his name was. And he just whacked everything that came his way. He was brilliant, darting out of the line and hitting with full force. Really got in front and did some fantastic work. And they played some nice stuff, didn't they? I mean, Uati going in for a hat-trick to level up the efforts of Manu Vatavai in that New Zealand game against Samoa. And yeah, there was some powerful finishing, some big blokes, and two sets of brothers. Did you notice that on the team?
I've noticed in a lot of the teams there's plenty of brothers lined up in the same teams, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a lot of brotherly love out there, I think, for this World Cup.
In the Fijian team, it was the Sims brothers, wasn't it?
It was. There was all three of them, Corbin, Tariq and Ashton, all playing together for the first time. And there was also a couple of the other brothers as well, wasn't there? The Naguamas, who you know, were really big fellas, can shift like lightning as well. And I just was really enthused by how they went about their business, Fiji, and I'm really looking forward to their next game, which just so happens to be against Australia.
That's going to be a cracking game of rugby league, isn't it? And Australia, I know they'll be in a game, if the tackles and intensity that Fiji showed against Ireland is in full effect against them.
I saw a bit of a highlights package just the other day, and it was showing a Fiji attempt against Australia from 2008 in the last World Cup, and they were certainly diving out at the likes of Darren Lockyer and putting big hits on him. So wouldn't it be great if they did exactly the same on Jonathan Thurston come Saturday over at St Helens? If you haven't got your tickets for St Helens, I would suggest that you go and get them, because these Fijians are just so entertaining to watch, and as we know, the Australian All-Stars, they're going to take some to beat them, aren't they?
New Zealand looked good against Samoa, and I caught up with Jared Warre Hargreaves as he described the victory against Samoa.
Jared Warre Hargreaves, world champions up and running with a victory. How do you feel the challenge from Samoa side?
Yeah, mate, it was credit to them boys. They came out in that second half and they were outstanding, mate. So very disappointing result for us to let so many points in, but yeah, just good to get the win.
All in all, quite happy with your night's work.
Not really, to be honest with you, mate. I guess we really need to pride ourselves on our defence, and to let so many points in, I guess, in that second half was disappointing. So back to the drawing board, mate, and we're looking forward to heading over and playing against a big game against France. Yeah, mate, it was good to get a few combinations going, and as a few of our boys said, we did put ourselves under a bit of pressure. Discipline was another thing, and I guess. The skipper touched on it straight away after the game and said that we need to be, a bit disappointed with ourselves and, heads up and looking forward to next week.
Great atmosphere there, so how did you find it?
Oh, awesome, mate. I always enjoy coming over here to the UK and playing in front of the atmosphere here. It's just, just makes rugby league, it's awesome. So to see the crowd get behind the opposition, would have been good to get behind us a bit. But, it was just fantastic.
You are the current holders for the rest of the tournament. Do you guys need to do well to keep all of the trophy?
Yeah, mate, I guess, it's a long way away.
So it is a long way away, and New Zealand will be just concentrating on a match-by-match situation, won't they?
You're right, they do need to certainly improve on that effort. I was a little bit disappointed with the way that they started letting the Samoans come back into it, but it did create an awesome spectacle there at Warrington, which I think everybody enjoyed. The Samoans played some really enterprising stuff, and when the crowd really started to get behind them, that was when they started to come back into the game. And I said it last time out, but Anthony Milford is an excitement machine. We didn't see him perhaps running as much as we would like to, but when you've got the likes of Daniel Vido on one wing and then Lilua as well coming into the line and troubling defences, they're still going to take some beating, I think, some more. So they're certainly not out of the equation yet for qualification for the next round. But you're right, New Zealand, they have to move on from that. They have to be better, and I'm sure that they will be with Stephen Kearney cracking the whips there.
Next up for them, it's I was going to say a formidable-looking trip to France, but it should be a formality, shouldn't it?
I don't know about a formality. I mean, I think that's one of the games that's actually sold out, isn't it? Is it the one over at Avignon?
Yeah, in Avignon, isn't it?
So there'll be 17,000 crazy Frenchmen there, baying and screaming for their side, and that's going to be a hostile atmosphere, I think, for the New Zealand side. And they had to put up with an away-like atmosphere when they went over to Warrington. It looks like they're going to have to do exactly the same again. But listen, you know, they've got some fantastic players of New Zealand. They just need to make sure that the heads are on the job for as long as possible.
Now, Warrie Hargreaves is a young lad in terms of rugby league, but Petros Simonisiva is at 37 years of age, the oldest player in the Rugby League World Cup, but he still is an awesome sight to see playing, isn't he?
I have to admit, I was really looking forward to the Fiji and Ireland game for two reasons. One, because of the number of league players that have been called up to the Ireland squad, and the amount of players that I do know, perhaps a little bit personally.
Looking at the Ireland team, it was made in witness as well.
It was. Up to 10? Of the players, was it? I've had some sort of links with Widnes or Warrington.
Between 8 and 10, wasn't it, certainly?
Yeah, you know, so again, that's one that I was really looking forward to. But the other reason was because that man, Petro Sivanasiva, was playing. And to be honest, I've seen and charted his career all the way through. He's the top cap player in the forwards for Australia. He's played 30-odd State of Origin games, and I just couldn't wait to actually see him in the flesh and to get the chance to speak to him afterwards. I was on cloud nine.
And this is exactly what happened.
It's been amazing. I think just the whole build up to our first game, the experience of being in camp with the boys, it's been very humbling and been very special. So tonight was an indication of that. Obviously there's a lot of passion out there on display. As Rick said, we've got to channel it a bit better, be a bit smarter with it, but all in all, you know, very pleased with the efforts from the boys tonight. Our focus now turns to rehab, and we've got a few days to prepare, but I think we'll learn from the positives out of tonight, and obviously there's a lot of things to work on, so our focus will turn to that, but it's another big game for us, and it's a test match, and we're looking forward to it. For us as a playing group, as a squad, coaching staff, we've just been blown away with the reception that we've received since we've been here. And as I said, I keep saying humbling, but that's what it is, because for all of us, we've learnt about the history that we have here. I mean, that's something to be very proud of. And when we went to City Hall, that was pretty emotional, that's what it was, I think, for all of us, because it's history, and we're a part of that now, and we're going to continue that history here within this town. And we're so appreciative of the hospitality and the support that we received here, and definitely gives us confidence as we move forward. We spoke about that, about just harnessing that support that we are going to be fortunate to have. And no doubt there's plenty of Irish supporters in the crowd as well. We know that there's a strong Irish community here within Rochdale as well. So all in all, it was just a great night of football, and I think for all players that took part tonight, it was a great experience to be out there tonight. Now it's great. It's great to be a part of that, and it's a great moment for all the boys, for the brothers that they're taking part in it. I think it's unusual for them all to be playing in the same team, but I think for the rest of the boys, we really appreciate that link there, and definitely build on that.
They certainly will build on it. It's great to see, even at his age and what he's achieved in the game, he still talks so enthusiastically about the game.
Yeah, and the way that he played as well suggests that he could probably go on for another couple of years yet, doesn't it? But yeah, he's always been one of these players that's really struck me as wanting to get involved in the community. And great to hear him mentioning about that whole history, because Rochdale has a rich history in the Fijian heritage, and it all started off back in 1961 when two young Fijians brought the families across and they played over at Rochdale Hornets. And from there, the brotherhood, but you know, the whole family of Fijians sort of settled in the area, and now we see sort of like two or three different generations, and there was a heck of a lot, and they were making a lot of noise in the stands at Spotland as well, weren't they?
Yeah, player question was Mike Ratu, and interestingly, with Mike Ratu, he still lives in the Rochdale area, and his sons went on to play for Rochdale as well.
Yeah, the other players were Joe Lavula and Orsi Dewai as well, so there you go, you've learned something from this show.
Playing try scored during the opening rounds of the World Cup this last weekend, and leading the way with two hat-tricks of one each was Yukila Uwate and Manu Vatuvei.
Yeah, two tremendous wingers, and I bet if you was naming a World 13 at the moment, you'd have those two lining up, wouldn't you? Because to be honest, they're both beasts of men. In particular in Uwate's case, he can also run really, really fast. Vatuvei is unrivalled in the air, other than perhaps a Joel Monaghan type figure, perhaps. You know, you'd probably give him a run for his money.
Hi, I'm Tony Smith, head coach of the Warrington Wolves. This is the Rugby League World Cup final hooter on loverugbyleague.com and Radio General.
Now, if Tony Smith was watching the action from the opening rounds of the Rugby League World Cup, I wonder what he'd be thinking about him.
I think he'll have been thinking, there's been a lot of big hits, there's been a lot of exciting, entertaining play, but I'm sure he would have been wanting a little bit more, because coaches, they're never totally happy, are they? I think sort of looking at how the games have eventuated at the moment, for me, the game of the tournament so far, although we talked about it at some length, that was the New Zealand and Samoa game, a very close second to that one though happened at Derwent Park in Cumbria. Now, this was an almighty clash between Tonga and Scotland. Tonga were really heavily fancied to make a real impression on this tournament. Some people were even talking about them being perhaps the fourth team that could step up and fight the way through to the semi-finals. Now, you know, big raps, to be honest, especially when they've got a couple of halfbacks who haven't really been tried too much at first team level, let alone at international level. But yesterday at Derwent Park, the Tongan side, they scored first, and everything seemed to be going to plan. They hadn't banked on a really torrid tackling stint from Scotland, and a heck of a lot of character as well. I was just looking through their team sheet from when they played the game, and to be honest, Ian Henderson really stood out, guided them around the field. Danny Brough has gone on the back of a brilliant season with an excellent kicking game, but he wasn't the main focus of that. Even though he might have kicked five goals in that victory, he wasn't the main focus. I was just really impressed with lads like Ferguson. Brett Carter managed to get over for a try in front of his own fans, so that's a memory that he'll take with him for the rest of his career. And the Scots, after building a 20-4 half time advantage, they were really pegged back in the second half, and it was all decided with a very last minute, literally last few seconds decision of the video referee as to whether Scotland were going to win that game. Fantastic.
Great match, wasn't it? You mentioned the tries. Matthew Russell, Warrington's new signing, well at fullback, he got two tries for the Scots, but all in all, it was just enough for them as Tonga roared back into the game. And when Manu went over for his second try, it looked like Tonga got the match done and dusted. But a great comeback from Scotland with Russell scoring at the end, but they had to bite the nails at the end, didn't they, with the video refereeing decision.
They did, yeah. I mean, you mentioned Matty Russell there. He was a player that was really highly rated when he was coming through at Wigan. Spent the past season over playing in the NRL, had a bit of an injury hit season, to be honest, over there at the Gold Coast. I'm sure he's glad to get back to Blighty. He's actually a true Scot as well, born in Irvine. Came up, you could tell that he was a really proud performer for his side. The first try that he scored showed some excellent footwork. He somehow managed to step away from Fui Fui Moi Moi. Now, not a lot of players are able to do that, because usually that big man, you know, you've been hit by him as soon as he comes through. He tackles like a train. You know, so he was able to get around him in the first instance, and then his second try showed a lot more panache than that, even, because he had to get really low and get over the line.
Tell you one thing, Scotland do win from the opening games of the Rugby League World Cup this year is the prize for the best shorts. I was impressed with those tartan shorts they had on.
Hey, I tell you what,
I want a pair.
I like the kit full stop. I'm going to decide. I'm already searching back in my heritage. I want to find out whether I've got representatives so that I can play for Scotland or represent them at some point, and then I can wear those snazzy shorts as well.
I'm going to nick a pair out of Steve McCormack's bag when I see him.
See, trust you to talk about nicking. He's borrowing.
All right, I'll ask him for a pair. I'm sure he'll lend us a pair of it. I'll give us a pair of it, ask him. Tries on the night for Russell. Ben Fisher, who's announced he's retiring at the end of this World Cup. Carter and Dannebrog getting the 5 goals was enough for Scotland. But Tonga, some big lads, but they just seem to have missed a little bit of a better selection of passes in the middle of the field, didn't they?
Yeah, they sort of missed a little bit on guidance, didn't they, down the middle? Yeah. And certainly, as I mentioned, that half-back pairing, they're growing up really quickly together. I think over the coming years they'll probably be a formidable force, especially if they do keep faith in them. There was also a few mistakes as well from the fullback, despite him opening the scoring. That I think it was Fisihia, who opened the scoring for Tonga. But all in all, disappointing I think for Tonga, but a great result for Scotland. And we didn't think we'd be talking about the Scots as being the only representative of the home nations to come away with victory. We've got a number of decent games coming up, haven't we, over the course of the next few days. Obviously we're talking about this one, which is taking place at the moment between America and the Cook Islands. I hope that's living up to the billing. Then we've got two sold out encounters this weekend: New Zealand against France and England against Ireland. The New Zealand France one comes from Avignon, England and Ireland from Huddersfield. And then in the evening of Saturday, we've got Australia against Fiji from St Helens, followed by what I think is going to be an intriguing international on Sunday, that between Wales and America. And the Scots, they're again going to be taking Derwent Park by storm. They're up against those tough Italian boys.
Be interesting to see what the attendance will be for that one as well, because in the game against Tonga, it was Workington's biggest crowd in 20 years for a rugby league game.
I think it was the biggest gate that they've had in Cumbria for 20 years, if not longer. Fantastic. And again, it's great to see so many people getting out there enjoying it. I even saw a lot of the older people in the crowd getting involved in the old viral dance, which has been going down a storm on Twitter and on YouTube. I would encourage people to go.
I've been having a go myself, but I've just not quite practiced the bit where you do the move it.
Yeah, I know the bit you mean. I'm struggling with.
No, you get your hands and you roll it to the left and then to the right. I'm struggling with that.
I'm struggling with the passing, but then again, I can never pass left to right anyway.
Mentioning attendances, even at Rochdale the other night, a record attendance for a rugby league game at the Spotland Stadium.
Yeah, someone tweeted after the game that the last time they saw so many people in the ground, John Woods was dancing past John Cogger, so that's going back at least 24 years, because that's how long ago it was when John Woods did his time at Rochdale.
Okay, we have some player reaction. Let's get in the coach's corner. It's Justin Ellis, Matt Parrish from Samoa, and the holders Stephen Kearney from New Zealand.
I thought the best side won. I think it's fair to say that I thought they had a little bit more class in a few little areas. But you know, we've got a great spirit within the Welsh side, and they give everything they've got, and I won't say anything against my players, because they've always given me everything they've got, and they did again today. But I just thought in a few subtle areas they just had a little bit more class in some key areas. I thought we had an opportunity when we put our noses in front, and you know, we dropped a couple of balls when we had a little bit of momentum. And when you do that, when you've got momentum in games, you've got to take advantage of that, and we didn't do that. But I thought, you know, from the start of the game to the end of the game, I didn't think we kicked well enough. I didn't think we got the right territory. And ultimately, when you don't get position on fields, then you have to do a lot of defending at the wrong end of the field. And I thought they had a lot of possession where they wanted it, and we had a lot of possession where we didn't want it. And, you know, I thought that was the sort of the story of the afternoon. You know, we've spoke about, look, if we're at our best, then we'll challenge anybody. And unfortunately tonight, we weren't at our best. What you don't do is throw everything out of the window and change everything and change the script. You know, you've got to make sure that, you know, you believe in the way you're playing. And I know my players do, and I know we do. We've just got to make sure we improve in a lot of areas, a lot of little areas, to get the right result next week against USA, because again, you know, it's a team that have got momentum and a team with confidence, so we've just got to make sure that we are in the right frame of mind next week.
Well, I think that when they played well and they got brought the crowd into it, they rose to the occasion, which is good, because the Warrington crowd were fantastic. To hear that crowd sing Samoa was certainly, you know, I know I was touched for it, and I'm sure the boys were too. We just needed to keep our composure and keep, you know, practicing what we practiced all week. You know, I thought at times we lost our way a little bit, and then at other times I thought we certainly had some momentum and had the better of the game at times. We lost them early, like in the first half, so it was certainly a courageous effort in that second half to play against a team like New Zealand with only 15 men. We've been together now 10 days, and I think that we were just talking about on the way up, actually, just get our combinations right, you know, particularly defensively. We had a few lapses there, which, you know, just comes through training and playing together, and I think we could, you know, we did have some pretty soft tries at times, to be honest. So we can fix them. I've got no doubt we can. So, and as I said, we just need to improve as the tournament goes. Well, again, when you lose, you train with a guy all week at six and you lose him after 15 minutes, it's always going to be a little bit disruptive for a while. And again, you know, Peter Godinay hasn't played hooker all year for the Warriors, and he played 80 minutes against the fiercest pack in the world. So, you know, I think there's quite some courageous performances there. We're thinking Papua New Guinea. We need to win that. It's all about the big picture for us.
I wouldn't say embarrassing. I think it was disappointing. But again, I think the Samoan side, you know, they played with a lot of energy through that period, and we, you know, we dropped a couple of balls, and sometimes when they just gained the momentum, you know, we dropped some balls and we touched it a couple of times whilst they had the footy, so it just, you know, the momentum just built. We didn't see a great deal of possession for 20 minutes there, and, you know, to their credit, I thought, you know, they play with a great deal of energy and enthusiasm, and consequently put some tries on us. In saying that, you know, there were some, you know, there were some good parts of the game there for us, and, you know, when we, you know, stuck to our structures and our processes, you know, I thought we built some really good pressure on them, and you know, and we come up with some pretty good plays, but it was just when we you know, we give away a silly penalty, or, you know, we forced an error that we gave the Samoan side some position. And, you know, when you got the likes of the personnel that you have in their team carrying the ball like they did tonight, then, you know, they're going to build some pressure on you. So, well, I thought, like I said, I thought they played really well for, you know, a good period of that second half. When you give aside, you know, the position that we did for 20-25 minutes of that second half, then it doesn't matter who they have, they're going to build some pressure on you. So, you know, that's more my concern, was the way we, you know, let ourselves down there by errors or silly penalties. The English crowds, you know, would tend to, I guess, go with the underdog, if you want to say that. So, and again, you know, as I mentioned, you know, they played with a great deal of energy for, you know, 20 minute period there, though. Carrying the ball hard, and you know, obviously that pleases the fans.
Right, you've heard Stephen Kearney and us talking about the Samoa versus New Zealand showdown at the Halliwell Jones in Game 1 of Group B in the Rugby League World Cup. Here's the match highlights.
New Zealand putting the ball through the hands. That's a great offload. Good defence flow from Anthony Milford, but he's just delayed the inevitable. The pass came out, the tackle. The first points on the board to come for New Zealand, not Samoa.
Really good play down that right-hand side. As I mentioned before, Tuivasa Sheck has really brought up the trees so far this season in the NRL. Named as a top wing, and you saw it there. Little pass came out to him from Dean Ferrer. He was right down that wing. Just slowed down just enough as Milford was reaching him. Put the ball back inside. And Simon Mannering, a veteran of 30 tests before tonight for New Zealand, touches down. And strangely enough, he's like Dad's army. He's Captain Mannering tonight.
Isaac Luke, look left and right, decides to go to the right-hand side. Ball being kept alive again. That's that supply line we were telling you about. And darting in the corner is Roger Tavusashek. Inside the Samoan 40 metres out.
Oh, Cassiano's on for the New Zealanders.
and straight away into the business he goes, and straight down the middle he goes as well. Look at that run, straight to the 20 metre line.
Heavily bandaged on the knees, I've noticed, but he's a big unit, isn't he? New Zealand now attack down the right hand side, calling the shots. It was Sean Johnson, the offload came in, and try time again for New Zealand.
Manor in again, full flight.
Simon Manning. Nice reverse pass, it's got to be said, by Johnson.
Arm out to the 10 metre line, over to the left hand side of the post. Godinet will look round again. He's certainly been the go-to man. Sends it left to Roberts, who takes the line on. He's took the line on. Oh, he's pushed his way through, and he's found it. That's a great bit of individual brilliance, to be honest, from Ben Roberts. He's only scored one try this year before that one, and he's come up with a try in the World Cup in the first game of his side's campaign, and it's put some more on the board. Lovely bit of individual brilliance for him.
And the holders are up and running at the half-time break with what looks like a comfortable 22-4 advantage against Samoa.
Manu Vatavai has leapt above everybody else like a leaping salmon, playing the ball ahead of his man, and touchdown at the corner. The route continues for New Zealand. 26 points to 4.
Breaking through is Caden Foran. Foran gets the ball away, and there's another try for New Zealand.
And a try it is as well for Isaac Luke.
As New Zealand throw the ball around like a basketball team here. Now they quickly down the left hand side. They got the offload away. They got the extra man out wide. Try time for New Zealand. It's Manu Vatavai. He gets a try for New Zealand. Can Samoa find a way through? They're going to come down this left hand side. Powering his way forward.
Matagi.
There's Matagi. Well met though by a couple of New Zealand defenders. They're going to return the ball back to the right-hand side. They've got the man out wide, and they can find him. Going for the try line himself. It's Joseph Lealua, and he's found a way through.
Godinet just drops it back over his shoulder, straightening the movement up. He's Matagi. I have been impressed with him this evening. Godinet to his right. Manu Malialli keeps it moving. Down that right-hand side to Lee St. Armand. Good run inside the 20. He goes to 20 metres in from the touchline. Run comes in. Now he's being fed down the right-hand side. Here's Lilia. Lilia flicks the ball out. Winterstein goes for the try line. He's held up. In fact, he's vetoed down that far side. Winterstein's got his hand up down this left-hand side. They've checked the run of Manu Malialli. Who chases for it? Has he got it? He's got the ball. He's stretched it down. Is it going to be given? There's a New Zealand man on the floor. Did he hold him up? I feel there's been a touchdown there, but was it stolen? Did he get it? I think this is a try for Manu Malialli. Ball eventually grounded. He seemed to be on his back when he grounded it.
I think
as well,
the key question is, was Hoffman taken out by the second Samoan defense attacker? We're going to find out right now. Try.
Yeah.
Manu Malialli gets Samoa's third try of the evening.
Now it's sent down the right hand side. Latest run coming in from Lee St. Armand, and he's rumbling his way through. Can he get it down? He's got half the New Zealand team on him. There's at least four or five defenders there, isn't there? And they've held him up virtually on the try line. Last tackle signal. Another chance here for Samoa. Oh, they've got him again. That's Suia Matagi. Sweet ball down the middle. And Matagi rushing through some ineffective defence. The pendulum has really swung in this game. That, Adrian, is now three tries in 7 minutes for Samoa.
They've hit a purple patch, haven't they? They really have hit a purple patch. It's under the sticks as well, which is crucial. Makes it an 18-point ball game.
Now it's Masoye again.
Masoye takes the Samoan team ever close to that try line. The last tackle. It's in the hands of Ben Roberts. He checks his run. Goes himself. Tries to get the offload away, but it's quickly smothered by a man in black. And the New Zealand try line remains intact. Good play by Josh Hoffman.
Try saver from Hoffman that. Him and Johnson combined with the tackle, and it was needed, wasn't it? Oh, the ball's got loose. Here comes Samoa. They've scored again here. Antonio Winterstein has picked up the pieces and got it.
And I'll be honest with you, Samoa have took the chances and made a real game of it, which is what the fans were hoping for. I'm sure everyone within the rugby league were hoping don't be a one-sided scoreline.
New Zealand have had the penalty, though. Manorin with the carry. Now it's all out to the left-hand side. Great ball. It's Batavai. Batavai for the corner. Batavai with a hat-trick on his 21st international appearance
for them. And game four goes in favour of New Zealand. The holders are up and running with a victory. They were coasting at one stage. At first of all, 22-4. Then they made it 36-4. 8 minutes inside the second half. And a great comeback from Samoa brought them within 12. And it needed a final try by Vatavai for a hat-trick to settle the nerves and make sure that New Zealand don't slip up.
There's the best bits of that game, and I'm still impressed by what New Zealand produced despite Samoa making a real good game of it.
Yeah, it was some really interesting attack that you know, New Zealand managed to put forward. Very constructive. Really impressed with the two halfbacks, the way that the back line actually shifted as well. Sean Johnson is a young halfback with so much riding on him, and he's had such a great season for the New Zealand side that you know, they couldn't really leave him out of the international selection. So yeah, really pleased as far as their attack goes. Defensively, they've got a heck of a lot of work to go. But I'm sure they'll get it right, and they've got the time to do it as well.
Out of the games we've seen, other than the USA and Cook Islands game, because we're here and not down in Bristol, who's been the standout team performance for you so far?
The standout performance for me, I'm going to go Scotland, actually, because, you know, as a team that was unfancied, I think, coming up against the Tongans and with the whole level of NRL experience that they have, you know, the Scots really did roll the sleeves up. And I suppose as well, when they were, you know, on the end of so much penalties and so much possession going against them for most of the second half, it was basically a real gutsy effort. You got the likes of Mitch Stringer from Sheffield really throwing himself about. You mentioned Ben Fisher before, fantastic that he was able to get in on the act, and a cheeky little try he claimed as well. So for me, I would go for him. I'm going to say all of it. I just love all of it. You can't really get me beyond that. I find it really difficult to split my enthusiasm for just different games, because I just think that we've had a really impressive tournament thus far, and let it continue.
Fingers crossed. It's been a great opening week of Rugby League action in the Rugby League World Cup. Long may continue into week two.
That was the Rugby League World Cup final hooter on Radio General, Hospital Radio for Warrington, and loverugbyleague.com.